We all think about what we eat. We plan our meals or count carbs or do any number of things when it comes to what we consume. But do you ever think about the flavor of what you consume? Sure you do. What we eat or drink either tastes good or it doesn't. In fact, taste is the number one consideration in what we consume. Yet there is more to it than just like or dislike, and there's even a whole industry dedicated to it. Flavor is memory. Flavor is feeling. Flavor is science. Flavor is art. Flavor is McCormick Flavor Solutions. I'm Landy Donovan, and welcome to our Flavor University podcast, where we will explore the science, artistry, and industry behind flavor. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for being here today. I have two awesome guests with us today, and we are going to be talking about congruent flavors. Taste in harmony is what we are calling it today. So first, I'd like to introduce our first guest, Laura. Laura, can you tell us your full name and a little bit about yourself and history here at McCormick Flavor Solutions?
Sure. Laura Partida, Principal Flavorist for the Health and Nutrition Beverage Team. I started with FONA International back in 2009 and actually got into the industry in 2001. So I've been in the flavor industry for a very long time, and it's a great career. Who doesn't love to eat and drink?
That is so true, and I agree. It's an amazing place to be. The things I've seen in my time here, I always tell people what you guys do is magic.
Jason, can you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, definitely. So first off, Randy, I loved your opener right there too. It got me into the vibe, the mood. But Jason Middlehauser, Senior Principal Scientist at McCormick Flavor Solutions. I have worked for this wonderful organization for a little over 16 years now. 10 of those years were on the bench, so I got to taste a bunch of awful things and try to make them taste a heck of a lot better over my years, with the last 4 to 5 years of my time being more on the management side. So I oversee what I just say, all things functional, whether that's coming from a beverage, whether that's coming from a gummy, a pharmaceutical product, you name it, I oversee that team here. So, and I love doing it.
So two things you just mentioned that I want to go back to really quickly. You said on the bench. And when I first started here, I'm going to tell you, I did not know what on the bench meant, and I had to Google it. So tell me, what is on the bench?
Good call out right there. Apologies for not being clear. Essentially, I was working on whether we have projects come in for just flavor selections down to a customer sends us a workable base. I was responsible for optimizing that, adding different sweeteners, acids, gums, etc. But obviously, most importantly, coming from McCormick Flavor Solutions, is adding flavor to it. So all of that together, you want to create this wonderful harmony of taste attributes. So that's what I focalized and specialized in. And I would work closely with Laura, for example, who would create all the wonderful flavors that go into those products.
That's super helpful. And then the other thing you mentioned was functional. Either of you can probably answer this, but for some people listening might not know exactly what we kind of categorize as functional types of products.
Yep. So you're looking at me, so I'll answer that. So functional can mean, I mean, if you look at just our society as a whole over the last, especially 10 to 15 years, the health and wellness category has grown by leaps and bounds. So when we talk about functional, it can mean a multitude of different things. You could be talking about, you know, the big area is protein. So whether that is dairy-based proteins all the way to your plant-based proteins, it could be things in the energy space as well too. So obviously the first thing that most people think about is like caffeine, but anything that's going to help you give you that boost throughout the day. But then even things like hydration. So as simple as the addition of salts in a product can have a functional benefit in there. So it's those plus a heck of a lot more things, but that's what we mean by functional.
That's great and so interesting. As I've been here, and obviously you both know, you come across it every day. Like you said, it's just such a huge part of what we're coming across from our customers and just walking up and down the aisles of the grocery store, the convenience store. You know, everything is packing all these extra functional benefits. And I think we're all
stacking too. Yeah.
So I just gave the example of like protein and hydration and energy. You know, a lot of times you'll see each of those products sort of, you'll see a lot of those products on the shelves just sort of focus on one of those areas. But what we mean by stacking is seeing multiple segments blended together. So you could see products out on the marketplace right now that have both an energy piece, for example, as well as a hydration piece lumped in there. So as you can probably imagine, the more you stack, the more certain additional challenges might arise from it.
That's awesome. That's, I think, kind of gives us a great base to work off of as kind of understanding some words as we dive deeper into the different things we're going to talk about. So I guess the next question I have, you know, we were talking about congruent flavors. So what are congruent flavors? How do you explain that?
So the simple one-word definition for congruent flavors is creating harmony. So and what we do in the wonderful world that we work in is we leverage flavor to our advantage to support certain taste attributes that you might pick up when you're working on a product or a certain customer base. And normally these things are typically tied around things like sweet, sour, bitter, salty, and umami. But what you're really trying to do is just get a general framework or an idea in your mind in regards to, okay, there's certain taste attributes that are coming through on this. How can we leverage flavor to our advantage?
It's like working with what you have and trying to see what is going to work well with the base. What are the attributes? What is coming through without any flavor already in there? And what kind of flavors does it remind you of? Or what kind of flavors do you think would, like he said, harmonize, work well, just kind of flow and actually make it taste like it's naturally already there?
Okay, that's a great way to explain that. So understanding that kind of that definition of what you're telling me and that purpose of what it's doing, harmonizing, giving it sort of a natural, I guess, maybe I'd say expansion on the flavor that you have there. What are some examples that you might give me?
Well, the simplest definition right off the, a way to that we would approach try off the bat is, let's go back to like a protein example. So I'll lean in on plant protein, or more specifically, I would say pea protein. So if I was to just create a simple solution where I'm trying pea protein overall, some of the descriptors I might layer into it or describe it as is obviously, you know, you're going to have some bitterness associated, vegetative notes, obviously, some nuttiness even as well too. So, you know, when I look at that and taste it, then it gets my mind sort of thinking, well, okay, how am I going to approach this from a flavor perspective? And it's challenging and hard because especially when you're looking at plant-based products, you know, what are the top three flavors that consumers are looking for?
So I'm in marketing. I don't think I mentioned that earlier. So I'm in marketing. And when we get requests, people, you know, they always come to us. And when they're coming for plant, a lot of times we get the vanilla, the chocolate, and the bare strawberry. Those are, you know, we're always hit with those.
Yes.
The first three.
And yeah, and that's where I was going at. So who wants to taste something that is vanilla or chocolate sprinkled with peas? You know, they don't go hand in hand. There's not that happy marriage right there. So I will say that over the years since I was on the bench, these plant-based proteins and from a taste perspective have gotten a heck of a lot better over the years, but there's still a lot of taste challenges, as you can probably imagine with it. So how we have to sort of think about this is, okay, well, I need to flavor this with chocolate, but you know, there's still some of these vegetative notes. There's still some of these savory notes, nutty notes that are coming through. How can I balance that out and have a product that consumers are going to love and want to repeat buy? Because that's the end goal here. So, you know, one of the first things I always look at is different types of nut flavors, for example, whether that's just a traditional peanut, maybe it's a hazelnut, almond, etc. But, you know, like some of those nutty notes and everything will sort of balance out the nuttiness associated with pea protein. So that marriage just synergistically goes in a way where just adding in a dash or a sprinkle of it can make that product taste a lot smoother. So that's what we mean by congruency in more of a very direct form.
Okay, so congruency is when you're sort of matching the flavor to what is there. So
yeah.
Bringing out that characterizing flavor that you have.
Yep. Yep, that's one way. There's several different ways, but yeah, that's the most direct way that how we would approach it.
Okay. And then when you have a product like that, so you have chocolate, do you call that out? Do you say this is a chocolate pecan, or is that just sort of in the background?
It depends. Sometimes our customers only want to call out chocolate. So we'll add flavors, obviously, that do contain chocolate, and you want it to taste like chocolate. But we will sprinkle in, you know, possibly a common or a very low, you know, low level of a pecan note, which just kind of helps round out that background of that protein. It's not necessarily in your face. You can't taste it, but it just kind of just flows. It goes well with the profile. So the overall flavor that you're going to smell and taste, you know, that's going to be chocolate, but it's going to taste balanced in the front, middle and end, because we did add that additional either a pyrazine mix, which are compounds found in nuts and brown flavors, or maybe we will add something that'll help smooth out some of those protein notes. So maybe a vanilla type flavor, or maybe just some sweet, general sweet brown notes that aren't necessarily jumping out at you as a nut, as a vanilla, but it's just there to kind of help balance out all of the other attributes of that base.
And what's sort of interesting, just to piggyback off of some of the things she's saying, like, you know, even adding in low levels of vanilla, for example, you know, when you're looking at a lot of these products, especially in like the plant protein, because it's these products are typically considered all natural. So you're not unfortunately using the likes of like sucralose or whatnot to sweeten them. You're using materials like stevia or monk fruit in there. So you're now dealing with also sweetness challenges. So when Laura's talking about the addition of vanilla, like our minds associate vanilla with sweetness. So that's a way to sort of trick it to help make that perception of sweetness greater. So that's a really unique way to be able to approach it. And then also too, and everything going off of what she was saying as well is, you know, all these different things that she's layering in, whether it's from pyrazines to different vanilla components, it's making the flavor more complex, more differentiated, more customized to the end consumer. So now you're getting a product or a flavor profile that's going to be extremely unique, but also then really support that specific base.
So my background, I don't think I mentioned this earlier, is I'm trained as a chef. I went to culinary school. And so when you're talking about enhancing these flavors and sort of layering and bringing things out, you're doing this in the lab through, you know, pulling out a vanilla note or a nutty note. And when I do that, I might use ingredients, but you were just using a word for, is that, I don't want to, is it a compound?
It's compounds that are naturally found in those foods. So when I speak of a pyrazine, these are those the really nutty, roasty kind of notes that are found in nuts or found in chocolates. When I'm talking about vanilla notes, it might be vanillin. It might just be, or even as simple as like maltol, which is just a generic sweet brown. And these are just some of the different types of raw materials that I can use to sprinkle in to kind of fill out and round out a whole flavor. Not all flavors are a couple of materials. Sometimes there are many, but a lot of them work synergistically as well together to kind of help round out that flavor that we're trying to get. Sometimes we do add some other materials that are not even found in a chocolate. Maybe they're found in, like I said, vanilla. Maybe they're found in caramel. And they work together because they're all in the same general family. So they're also congruent with each other. So all these brown flavors, it's a lot easier to work with other brown flavor families too, because they already, you know, taste similar. They have some of the similar components within them, but they have different attributes that do help bring out either mid notes or back notes.
So can you tell me a little bit, what is a mid note or a back note? And I think earlier one of you mentioned a top note.
We kind of talk about this a little bit when we do our Flavor University class. So when our customers come in, I kind of guide them through some of the different compounds that we have. But some of the mid notes, sometimes we have some compounds that are called aldehydes, for example, and they kind of bring out some aromatic top notes in the middle of that profile. So if you can think about tasting a time continuum, I guess, you know, when you first taste something, those are the top notes, what you smell, what you taste. That's the first thing you get. And then as you keep tasting and that profile starts to develop, you get some mid notes. So here's where you might start to get some of those creamy notes. And for these creamy notes, we might add like lactones, for example, which are found in dairy. And then you also have end notes, which could be anything from sweet to nutty to sometimes they are bitter. Sometimes we have bitter end notes. And maybe you do want that end note to be bitter, for example, like a dark chocolate or maybe a grapefruit. But maybe you want your finish to cover up maybe a bitter note in your base. So you might add some other kind of note. Other compounds that might be more on tail end. And on a gas chromatograph, for example, all these compounds come up based on time. So the compounds that have a lot more, the compounds that have more carbons, for example, they tend to pop up at the end. And we tend to taste that way as well. The GC, the gas chromatograph that we have in our mouth, that's how I think about it. It also tastes that way. So the way we taste it's at the end. It's kind of rare we find those compounds popping up and tasting kind of at the end of that taste experience.
That is so amazing because I think so many of us have no idea that that's what goes into it. And we just taste something and we think, oh, that tastes good. And what you just said from the top note to the mid note to the end note, I can taste something and I can tell you maybe there was garlic in this. There was onion in this. It was sauteed. It was caramelized. It was simmered for 3 hours. But I can't necessarily tell you it was on a carbon and a mouth works like this. And it's just amazing how here what we do, we can all come together to recreate that. And like I said, I kind of joke that this is magic, but it's magic, it's science. And it's just remarkable what you're all doing in the lab and really making, you might go into the grocery store and you can taste a chocolate milk it's good, it's sweet, it's chocolatey, but then you taste that really deluxe product where it's rich and it has that feel, and that is just something so special. And I know that's exactly what you're describing and explaining how you make that happen too.
Yes.
So
yes,
that I hope that gives our listeners an idea of those products.
Yes, definitely.
So that's such a, I appreciate that. Another thing that we talk about a lot when we're coming up with flavors, because we do so much kind of cross-functional teamwork, and as we pick flavors for, a customer might come to us and say, we want a new protein drink. What is, what are people looking for? And we talk about approachable adventure is something we talk about a lot.
From an approachable adventure standpoint, I think it really ties back to some of the things we were sharing about before. It's almost like, do you want to make that call out on the finished product or not? And there's a couple different ways that we can approach that. So, let's use somewhat of a different example here. So let's go to the hydration space. So when I'm looking at that, let's say they want a strawberry flavored product. So, when I taste that product, yes, can I get those bright, juicy, sometimes in some instances, maybe even like a candy-like strawberry to come through, but is that really hitting home with what the end consumer is looking for? Maybe not, So what else can I do from an approachable adventure perspective to make that product more consumer liking? So one way that you can look at it is, hydration products are extremely salty to a degree, some more than others. So you can almost do a spin where you try to rope in, well, what other products out there are really salty that you get at a restaurant or grocery store, et cetera. So one of the things that our team does a lot is look at the alcohol space. So, take like margaritas, for example, like who doesn't come across a margarita that doesn't have some type of salt rim to it. Sometimes it could have other things on there too, like spices and stuff. But the key thing that everyone thinks about when they think of a margarita is a salt rim. I love salt. I lick that stuff. It's fantastic and tasty. So what I might end up doing is, one, I can talk with the customer with, do we make this like a strawberry citrus profile? Where I add in a background of lime notes. So it really then like it captures the aspect of a margarita in a sense, obviously without tequila. But then you can also do things as well too, more from the subtle perspective where it's almost like hidden. So maybe the customer's just very adamant, like, I just want this to be strawberry okay, fine, great, I can do that. But that doesn't mean that when I'm on the bench, there might not be some tricks or flavor compounds that I use that Laura makes for me that can sort of help make that strawberry flavor more unique, more robust, more complex. So you know what? Like maybe on the bench, I add in a dash of lime or a dash of lemon or some grapefruit in there. What is that going to do? It's going to elicit a little bit of that citrusy tangy note that I think will also complement the salty hydration piece of it. But then it also makes that strawberry a little bit more unique, defined, and is the right fit for that end product overall.
Sometimes we pebble in a little bit of a tropical note. And sometimes, you know, you don't even have to say that it's in there. Maybe just a little hint of a guava that'll help give a little bit more of a ripe note to the strawberry without being, you know, outright guava and tropical and too foreign. It just gives it a little bit of a different note that just rounds out that flavor or just brings it out a little bit more, kind of give out a little bit more of those like ripe or even juicy notes as well.
Yeah, guava is so like impactful too that you don't need a lot for it to go a long way. And if you think about even like the taste, if you're familiar with guava overall, it has some like sulfury, very like unique taste attributes. So, you know, like even now stepping away from the hydration space, because taste challenges aren't as complex there as let's say we're now switching gears to like an energy drink where you have a lot more of those bitter notes associated with it. Like doing like a strawberry guava type flavor profile could sort of be that sweet spot in order to get a product that tastes really good.
And sometimes with those types of products, you do end up getting some more of these bitter notes. Sometimes the functionals are just, you're almost like wrestling with it, trying to get the flavor profile to come through and still wrestling with that bitter end note. So I know recently we had a project with some very, very mean end notes. And we were trying to just go with a fruit punch. And in the end, your typical fruit punch just wasn't cutting it. And I said, you know what? I'm working on this other flavor now, and it has some like tropical kind of notes. It was a black currant flavor, and it really brought in this kind of fruity note only at the tail end where we needed it. So we didn't have to call it out as a black currant flavor, but the fruit punch stayed. So the citrus notes in there, the cherry notes, they were all working very well right at the beginning. So the front and mid notes were all taken care of. And then that black currant note just kind of slid in the bag and kind of helped cover up that bitter note from those functional ingredients that were in there. And I think it worked out pretty well.
So you talked about some bitter notes or some salty notes in a base. How do you advise customers talk to you when they bring these bases to you? What's the best way to communicate on what they're looking for as they work with you to meet their flavoring challenges?
I would say, yeah, first and foremost, just having an open conversation right from the get-go to understand what the ultimate goal is for the product. With obviously, from my perspective being, you know, what's the flavor goal here? So, you know, with that, then it's then having at least a conversation with them or them sharing with us their specific base that they want to work on. Reason for that is really we want to be all on the same page with, you know, what each of those components in there taste like, smell like, even down to like a mouthfeel aspect as well too. That really gives us the framework or almost like a skeleton in regards to, you know, what we're dealing with here. And then it has our brains churning in regards to potential routes to explore overall, not only from like an application scientist who's developing the finished product, but most importantly too, from like Laura's side on flavor creation on how to map out what that flavor could look like in that product.
You know, this reminded me of with a customer last week where we had to ground ourselves with what does this product taste like without adding any flavor yet. Let's just take that first. And we knew the avenues we wanted to take it, you know, X flavor, right? So we do that. We taste first, just no flavor. Here are three options, for example, that we did with, let's say a strawberry flavor, for example. And here's where we are. We already tasted these. We think that a strawberry is not going to cut it on its own. We try a different profile. So then we start layering in other flavors. And ultimately, I think in the end, the ultimate flavor, this custom flavor, does become this layered flavor of attributes that need to go into that base to kind of help, I always say, to smooth it out, to round out that flavor. But our customer works with us, and they both, we see things at the same time. So we taste things, we're seeing those attributes that need to be rounded out or that are popping out a little too much. Sometimes it is actually changing the base. And Jason can talk to that a lot, you know, working with them and say, you know what, this base might benefit from a reduction in cocoa powder, for example. You know, it's the bitter notes from that cocoa powder are a little too strong, and we're just, you know, we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot here. Maybe we don't need as much cocoa. Maybe we can add more cocoa extract or cocoa essence, some kind of cocoa flavor that would help make the taste experience a little better, make them want to come back for another sip, another drink.
Yeah, jokingly, I always just ask if they will add sugar to it, but I get told no most of the time. So it's unfortunate. But yeah, I think another big thing too, and everything is having some like reference products. So, you know, I think going back to Laura's example there, you know, having like knowing like, oh, hey, we really like this ice cream, and this is what we want our product to taste like. So bringing in not only that product, but then also a couple others that sort of fit in that category as well too, whether it's different protein milks or shakes, et cetera, other competitor products as well, just to like fully understand the whole map. Because, you know, sometimes as much as I would love to say that the product we're matching, yeah, we can do, there's always going to be certain challenges with it. If we're working on a plant-based protein beverage and the target is a full-fat dairy ice cream and everything, you know, it's not apples to apples and whatnot right there. So there's certain key attributes that we know are going to be important to the customer that we need to make sure that we're able to successfully weave in there to find that happy balance between the two.
As you're describing all that, I think it's really interesting how much communication and really collaboration on the products that you're doing together. I mean, you're definitely, somebody isn't just sending you their base and saying, I want chocolate, and you're adding chocolate and sending it back, and then it goes in a bottle and gets shipped out. I mean, this is a, you know, really collaborative process, a ton of feedback. And it sounds like, well, on both sides, really having an open mind is really important.
At the end of the day, we're always looking to satisfy the customer first. But, you know, it's not to say, though, that there's not certain challenges or things that come up. And, you know, depending upon what stage you are in the overall product development cycle, you know, there could be some more flexibility. So that's why it's really important, like upfront, to really understand what is flexible, what can be changed versus what are the no-nos. And then making sure too, like weaving in several other different departments to make sure that we're achieving those goals. So, you know, whether it's from a regulatory side and making sure that the flavors that Laura is developing meet all the different types of restrictions, whether it's like from an organic perspective all the way to a country compliance, maybe we need to weave in sensory as well too, whether we're trying to compare two products side by side or just making sure that what we're developing is moving the needle to what the customer's liking.
Well, I thank you both so much. I really appreciate the time and all the information and expertise that you shared, and just really helping us understand what congruent flavors can do to a product to really enhance what can be a base with, you know, these off notes, whether it's bitterness or saltiness, and really bring out the flavors that you're adding to it or hide the flavors that you might not want to taste. There's so much to it and so much that you do in the lab for us. Either of you, I'd love to hear kind of any final thoughts or things you'd like to touch on to kind of close us out.
Yeah, it's really kind of like a puzzle, you know, kind of like an adventure in trying to solve this puzzle of, you know, what's already there? What's missing? What can I add to kind of make it all complete? And sometimes we start in one direction and end up in a completely different direction. And sometimes we don't. Sometimes it is straightforward and sometimes it's easy. But like with any puzzle, there is frustration. And that's why, you know, customers do come to us. You know, they're looking at our expertise at facing these challenges that are common in our industry. But it is fun. In the end, you know, we do get to taste and make great tasting products, and we want people to like what they're drinking. So it's fun.
Yeah, and from my perspective, going back to what we were speaking about earlier, is just really understanding and knowing, you know, the base at hand. What are the certain types of taste attributes associated with it? What types of off notes are you picking up? And then even down to a mouthfeel perspective, that really will set the stage for what potential routes you can explore to achieve a solution overall. And then another thing is too, is just, you know, don't always default to the obvious. So if you have a very specific characterizing flavor that you're looking for, yes, by all means, like, you got to be able to deliver on that. But there's other key flavors, whether you want to call them out and make them part of that product label, or if you want to sort of like hide them and just have them in there at subtle levels to once again add, not only be synergistic with the base, but also be synergistic with the characterizing flavor. Those things are really helpful to make sure that you're able to get a product that is going to be well-liked and well-bought again.
Don't be afraid to try, you know, if you just want a strawberry flavor product, don't be afraid to try that strawberry daiquiri flavor, that strawberry milkshake, that strawberry lemonade. Maybe you don't use much of that and the predominant flavor is a different strawberry flavor. But if you just try to layer in, you know, different notes, you may be surprised at what you achieve.
Yep, it all goes back to, I think you stated in your first line, one of your first lines about, you know, there's the science piece to it, and then there's like the art and trial period to it as well too. So sometimes you just got to like take a risk. Some things that might not like seem straightforward and like, oh yeah, I don't really know if this is going to work or not. Give it a shot. Sometimes I've had the most pleasant surprise and happiness when things I was like, I don't even think this is going to work, but let's just try it. And then magically you come up with something that just blows you away.
So true. And it's really true. Some of the best things that I've tasted in the lab. And then one of you has said to me, this is what's in, you know, layered behind there. And it's just kind of mind boggling. And, you know, it really brings out a different depth, you know, whether it's a little citrus for acid or, you know, you mentioned caramel and the chop, you know, just, but not, you know, not where it's a flavor blend. It's just that kind of back note to it. So, well, we always like to end our podcast with kind of a fun, unexpected question. Laura, when you mentioned the bitterness and in that one base you were working on and you called it mean, that just really stuck with me. And I thought that was such a clever way. And it, like I said, it just in my head that kind of created a character. So for both of you, my question is, who is your favorite movie or comic book villain? I know, kind of random, but right when you said that, we're a big comic book family or movie family. And I kind of pictured like Where the Wild Things Are. And maybe it's Back to School with all the kids books and stuff. But I pictured those monsters and Where the Wild Things Are. And
I really like that Cruella movie.
Yes.
When you speak of villain, I really love that character, not just because, you know, all the music and I love singing along to them, yeah. But she really does, you know, put style into revenge there. So that's funny that you bring that up.
She's like, yeah, that flavor was mean. Well,
we're going to fight this flavor. I'm going to come back at you with something really good.
That's a great one. She's a great villain. She has a ton of personality.
So for me, some of my favorite movies are from when I was growing up in the 80s. So I'm going to go with the Fratelli family. Does anyone know who that is? So that is from The Goonies, one of my favorite movies growing up and stuff. So yes, so I will say the Fratellis. I wanted to do something a little bit out there. Close second was I've always been a big fan of only the villains from Batman. So Joker was probably my number one in regards to that. Jack Nicholson was probably the best in that. But yeah, I wanted to throw you guys a little bit of a curveball and do something different. So.
Well, thank you both so much. You had just a true wealth of knowledge, and you made it so understandable and approachable, like our approachable adventure. But no, really, truly appreciate your sharing and your expertise and your true love for what you do being here with us. And for everybody listening, thank you. And, you know, we just want to, you know, be able to bring you our love for flavor and what we do and make this fascinating world where science and creativity come together to make our food more enjoyable. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.